Welcome to The Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by Dragonmount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Fourth Age. I, of course, am Andrew Gellos, and with me this time is Virginia.
Hi, Andrew. It's great to be here as usual. We also have with us for this episode Spencer and Richard.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here yet again.
So in just a very, very short time, an age will come to an end. Of course, it is, as we are recording this, January the 4th. So in 4 days, precisely at midnight in Provo, Utah, we will be releasing the final volume of The Wheel of Time, A Memory of Light. And to inaugurate that and a relaunch of our podcast, we will actually be doing a live broadcast from the BYU bookstore in Provo, Utah, for the midnight release party. Joining me for that will at least be Spencer. We don't know if we're getting anyone else yet or not. And we will have that information available to you via tweet and probably, hopefully, up on dragonmount.com very soon.
Yeah, that's great. It should be a great party.
Yes, the previous two releases that happened at the BYU bookstore were absolutely phenomenal. The bookstore's great. We will have lots of things going on there. Not only will there be the video stream like we've had in the past, that will be a thing. And it'll hopefully be a little bit nicer than what we've had years previous. Here's hoping. In addition to that, there will be lots of special guests and VIPs there, not the least of which, of course, will be Team Jordan, at least Brandon Sanderson and Harriet Rigney. There are still kinks we are working out and things we are trying to figure to make sure it all works, but we will get you stuff. And there will be lots of stuff to get you. So definitely follow the 4th Age Twitter. That's twitter.com/4thage. Twitter.com/Dragonmount. Also, there is a Twitter specifically for the midnight release, which is twitter.com/midnight release. That thing hasn't been used in a while. It should be coming back to life here shortly.
So as the live feed is rolling in, feel free to join us if you can. If you can't and you have a question or a theory or something you'd like us to contribute for you, do not be afraid to email us in advance at podcast@dragonmount.com, and we will make every effort to get any questions or any comments or any theories out to Team Jordan in whatever time that we are able to get with them. In addition to the midnight release, we will also have a few podcasters in various book signings.
I'm going to be probably at Los Angeles and San Diego both.
Hopefully we will be bringing you a lot of exciting stuff in the coming month or so as the tour happens.
It's a good news, bad news tour. It's very long this time. It's not a short tour as some of us have been in previous releases, but it is going to be split basically into two sections. So some of the dates are going to be in January, and then there's a short hiatus, and then there are going to be more dates in February. So by the time he gets to Los Angeles and San Diego signings in particular, almost everybody will have had nearly a month to read the books. So it should be interesting because people will have a lot more directed questions at that point because they'll know what's happened in the last book.
And there will definitely be a lot more information as these dates roll closer. And just like we say, keep an eye on Twitter and Facebook and definitely dragonmount.com, where we will keep all of the most current information so that you can know what to expect from us.
The Mandarin Elf knows this world.
Hitch is on hitch, my lord. All the readers who wait Tarm and Gaidon, they seem to expect the light to triumph. They cannot understand the glory of the shadow.
The chosen dwindle, the Mandarin. The weak fall away. I cannot save those who disregard spoiler warnings. Even I cannot step outside of time. Done by my ancient enemies, the podcasters of the Fourth Age. Would you unleash the spoilers in my service, Demandrin?
As you command, great lord, so shall I obey.
Then listen and serve. Hear who will die and who will live in chapters of books not yet released.
A Memory of Light spoilers, we have read all the pre-release material that Tor has put out. All right, and so with the brief what you should know out of the way, let's get right into our topic for the evening. Obviously, since the book is coming out in just a few days, we only have a few more days to speculate about what's going to happen. And we have spent a lot of time speculating about lots of big things happening in this series and what we expect the major outcomes to be. But there's a lot of little loose threads hanging about, lots of minor characters and other tangential? I'm not even sure
that's a word.
It is a word. Wonderful.
Yes.
And so other things like that that are just may have some part to play in the actual final last battle, but some of them are just little things that we kind of want to know more about and speculate a little bit on those. And so this is going to be kind of our Loose Threads podcast, the everything that isn't the last battle podcast, talking about what our thoughts are for all of that.
Sort of our last minute predictions and speculations. And as you said, Spencer, we've been speculating for this for a long, long time. I'm fairly certain I mentioned to someone recently that I think I've been speculating on this podcast alone for, what, nearly 7 years now? So, yeah, it's a little exciting and it's a little tense right now because, you know, to think that this journey that a lot of us have been on for nearly 20 years now is finally wrapping up, and it's just like you're coming to that point, you know that the ring is going into Mount Doom, and you don't know that the eagles are coming yet, and so it's like I know I did a Tolkien crossover. I can't help it. It's the day after Tolkien's or 121st birthday. Again, to the professor and to Mr. Jordan, because yeah, this is what fandom of epic fantasy literature is all about.
That is absolutely true. And I think you can be forgiven your crossover this time. So we're basically going to be concentrating on our predictions for the somewhat more minor characters. We've had a little bit of discussion about what actually constitutes a minor character, since all of the characters in this book are pretty well developed, and many of them are interlinked in so many different ways, it becomes difficult to draw the line, but we've decided that we've spent plenty of time speculating about the really major characters, so we've each picked out a few people that we want to make our particular predictions on.
All right, well, the first character that I want to discuss, one who I think has become my favorite character, even though he is also one of the most annoying, and he's become my favorite character mostly just because if there ever is some form of film or movie or television adaptation, I want to play him. But the first character I want to talk about is Gawain Strachand, the first Prince of the Sword to the Queen of Andor, and now the warder to the Amyrlin seat, and what I think may happen to him in our next book. Now, we do know that Egwene is not averse to the idea of marrying him. However, she does want to have a traditional wedding where she invites the families and they can have the whole big affair, especially since she's basically a head of state, basically the head of all states. It's wonderful. But first, she has this whole last battle thing she has to take care of, just a minor annoyance that she just deal with a dragon reborn and all that fun stuff. So my prediction, and I am treading the line here because talking about Gawain is a lot talking about one of the other major characters, which is Egwene, which is forbidden territory for this podcast. Either they won't get married at all, it just won't ever happen during the book, or it'll be some kind of rushed affair similar to, and I hate myself already for the crossover, similar to the end of the third Pirates of the Caribbean, where it's just in the middle of a battle, hey, you have the power, marry us, and then they're married. Wonderful.
Rand could do
or
it.
Better, Rand could do it. Or better yet, to stay within the Wheel of Time world, the Loyal's wedding.
Yeah,
just
true.
A little bit rushed. Yeah, and then Kallak Attack. Trolloc Attack
or,
for the Reception.
Or Morghese and Talonvor. Also a very rushed wedding.
Mm.
So there is the precedent there for rushed weddings, even in the Andorran royal family. And we know that most of Gawain's family is there. Egwene might have to travel to... Oh, someone shoot me in the head. I just forgot the name of Emmons Field for a moment. That hurt. Wow. Egwene may have to travel to Emmons Field and pick up her parents so that they can be there. But I can see them having a really quick wedding. And then during the course of the actual last battle, because Egwene is stupid and reckless, I think she might lose him. I think Gawain might.
How did I know you were going to do that?
How did we know that?
I don't know. Honestly, I think I would prefer it if he didn't die, but honestly, after that, where can you go with him? It seems like he's one of these characters who has to die, and then Egwene has to die, and then just everyone dies. It's wonderful. Delving more into the last battle idea with Gawain, he has trained as a general. He's trained under Gareth Bryn. However, he also has this weird kind of creepy, single-minded devotion to Egwene, which is... I understand. He's in love. He's in young love. And so he's kind of single-minded. But it can get really, really kind of frightening. And I have a feeling that even if he is called to the meetings to help to lend his ideas and position, first off, he's not needed. They have Gareth Bryn, Rodel, Torralda, and Matt freaking Coffin. He's not needed. But he may be there for some tertiary battle. But in the end, I think his devotion to Egwene will be his undoing.
I agree with that. And... the reason I agree with that more than anything is the fact that he still has the blood knife bracers in his possession. And it's
good point.
Throw those the freak away. You even kind of know how they work now.
This
throw them away.
Well.
Get rid of them. And he's not going to. He's going to use them. They're going to, like, do... magical woogity stuff, and he's going to end up, like, burning his life away doing something amazingly romantic and heroic. That's the pessimist in me. I would like to see him survive, but then again, we have to lose some people. As conservationist as Robert Jordan has been with his characters over the vast course of this series, we're going to have a pretty high death toll in this last book. And given that we know some people are definitely going to survive, at least that was the intention, you know, it just leaves a whole space open for those who could potentially not make it.
Yeah, I'd like to see his actions, instead of cause his death, cause Egwene's death.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Because he keeps being told over and over again, and he gets it for a little bit, but then he loses it again. He's got to, you know, stop thinking with his heart and start thinking with his head. I think that kind of a tragedy would be a near Shakespearean level type tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Nynaeve learns to heal death, in which case maybe she can bring back Egwene and Rand as a package deal.
Yeah.
I was sort of two minds of that as far as whether Gawain would survive. And then you reminded me, Andrew, of the rings, the Tarungriel rings.
Yes,
rings. And I remember when you took those thinking this will not end well.
What effect will it have on the other side of the water bond him using them?
I don't know. It gives him extra strength. It might minimize their effect for some period of time, or it might have no effect whatsoever. We don't really know.
Or it might have an effect on her because of the bonding.
Yeah, you don't know. What if using the rings drains her life away since it can't drain his? I don't think that'll happen, though. The reason I think that Gawain might survive is because he came so really close to dramatic death saving Egwene, and heretofore, once somebody's been in mortal peril, they don't tend to be in mortal peril again so often, except, you know, for Rand, of course, who has to be, and Elaine, who puts herself in that position on purpose all the time just to annoy Babette. I think that leads me to believe that Gawain might survive after all, but that would be an interesting twist if he survived and Egwene didn't. I had not thought about that as an option. So I'm going to come down on the side of Gawain survives.
All right, well, Gawain was my first choice. Andrew, who do you have?
My first choice. I'd kind of like to... I pretty much think I know where it's going to go, but I really like Davram Bashir. I like Perrin's father-in-law, and I have a almost 98% certainty that he is totally dead. I think he is dead primarily so that Perrin, through Fael, can inherit the Broken Crown and become an actual king, as opposed to some minor baron of the Two Rivers, essentially. I mean, Perrin's destined for great things, and I just think he and Tenobia both are going to completely kick it during the last battle. It'll be a shame, because, like I said, I really like him. I mean, he...
Yeah.
Just his idea of, well, this is how you have to handle Saldean women, and parents like, what? Just that confidence, the swagger, and the entire... And plus, somebody's been trying to kill him for, what, 2-3 books now?
Yeah.
Did you just use the word swagger?
Yes, I did just use the word swagger.
I may have to reach through the internet and slap you.
I may have been going for saunter at first, but, I mean, he's a horseman. Horsemen are allowed to swagger.
Oh, okay. And if you tell me it's because they're bow-legged, I'm going to reach through the internet and slap you.
I didn't say that. I just said they're allowed to swagger. Riding a horse is, like, amazingly cool. Ergo, swagger.
Okay, I'll throw in my 2 cents for that. Yeah, I think he's highly likely to die. And I think Tenobia is 100% likely to die. They've had a lot of foreshadowing about that. And I would hate to see Davram go, too. He's a pretty cool guy.
It would be very sad to see him go. However, I think we are going to lose him. You know, in the past, before Towers of Midnight, I thought multiple times that Davram Brashear was one of the Dark Friends closest to Rand.
Mm.
And then, of course, Rand would all Zen Rand and could tell a Dark Friend, and the Dark Friends gouged their eyes out, and so we know that he's not. So he's not going to die kind of Ingtar's death. Ingtar?
Yeah.
Is that
Ingtar.
The right name?
That was correct.
Yeah, well, at some point I was hoping to see another Ingtar-like scene with Davram Brashear. We just aren't, because he's obviously not a Dark Friend. But yeah, he definitely seems like he was written as one of these characters to be the background character that you know exists and you kind of care about, so that when they die, it touches you, but not in an actual, oh my gosh, they just killed who? Type way. So.
Okay, so I want to add a category to this. What do you think is going to happen to these minor characters thing? The final comment has to be, how are they going to die? Blaze of Glory or Aram Afterthought?
Oh.
With Davram, I honestly think we are going to hear about it after the battle is done. It'll be heroic. You know, he was found with 3 Murdrel with a Trolloc spear sticking through his back or something like that, you know, just something that shows that he went out fighting and he did everything he could, you know, standing over the body of Tenobia where she had fallen because she got hit in the head with a rock or something. I mean,
right.
Sorry,
no,
I couldn't
no,
say
no,
that
what
was
I mean.
A straight
thing. I call that, well, some of the readers probably want to hit her in the head, but no, wait. I would call that death a Blaze of Glory death, as opposed to an Aram Afterthought, where it's like we have books and books and books and books and books about Aram following Perrin around and whining and being the, you know, the fallen tinker and all this kind of stuff and everything. And like, and then it's like
Aram.
A paragraph. Yeah. He's fighting. He attacks Perrin. I yield, shoot him. I call that the Aram Afterthought. We got to get rid of him. Okay, here you go.
I think we'll find out about his death after the battle itself. I don't think it'll be a major scene, but I think he'll go down in a blaze.
Okay, so
Davram Brashear, here is your death warrant.
Yep, here's your death warrant, but Blaze of Glory, yay. Tadam Sane, he's been with us since book one in various levels of insanity during this time. He now commands hordes of, dare I say it, promise I won't rant, zombie Trollocs. I definitely don't think he's going to go out in any blaze of glory. It might be spectacular, but I don't think he's going to do himself any favors. I don't think he's going to achieve Moraine's vaunted redemption. There's no Dark Friend so lost to the shadow that he can't be redeemed to the light. I think
this might be
the exception, Moraine. Sorry. Now,
he doesn't even know where the light is.
He doesn't even know where the shadow is. He's some other form of evil.
He even hates the shadow, okay? He hates everybody pretty much uniformly. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what his fate's going to be, but I'm sure just judging on what we've seen in the last book or two, it's going to be beyond creepy.
I have a theory about his death, but it ties into my first one, so I'll hold off on it.
But I don't think Fane's going to survive this in any way, shape, or form.
I don't think he can survive in any way, shape, or form. I mean, he can't exist. I mean,
Unless the Dark One wins,
the Dark One's going to destroy him. So, you know, I really can't see if either side winning, he could be allowed to live. He's just too dangerous to be allowed to live.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to get another shot at Rand, you think, before the last battle?
I don't think he's going to get a last shot before the last battle. I think he's going to get a last shot at Rand during the last battle.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, and this is maybe random crazy speculations, I actually kind of think that Rand killing Padden Fane might somehow release, like, what is left from Mashadar in Shai'al Ghul, where, again, you have that kind of battling of evils sort of thing happening, like the two Vorlons in Babylon 5, season, like, 4.5 or 5 or something.
Yeah, I'll be honest, my personal theory with Padden Fane is that Rand is going to be stupid and kill the Dark One, and then Padden Fane is going to have to replace him.
Mm.
Oh, that would be disgusting. I don't think he can survive, so whatever happens, I'm sure it's going to creep me out, but he'll probably be gone. And his zombie Trollocs with him. At least they don't have any more Murdrol hanging around with him, because those don't do well with him at all. Padden Fane dies ignominiously.
Richard, your turn.
Number one.
Oddly enough, my first one, well, I already told you, kind of related my mind to Fane. I think that I was thinking about Tam. I think he's going to die in the last battle. I think he's going to die saving Rand from a strike from Fane. I don't know why that sticks in my head, but you know, I've been thinking about that now for the last several books.
Well, and in a weird way, because prophecies are tricksy. What if everybody's been looking at it wrong? Because what if it's not really the blood on the rocks being like a relation to Rand or Rand's actual blood? What if it's that symbology that, you know, it's Tam sacrificing himself as a father for a son?
For a son, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, even if
that
it's a metaphorical son.
I really would like Tam to survive, but now, that is a scene I would love to play.
Now, I don't know if you call that going out in a blaze of glory or not, but, you know, it's definitely an ultimate sacrifice.
Well, I think, that would definitely constitute a blaze of glory, because if it's serving a greater good, it doesn't necessarily have to be dramatic. It just has to be entirely laudable, you know, not just an afterthought. Oh, Tam Thor, pick up a stray Trolloc arrow, oops.
You could also work it out where he gets, you know, Fane in the same stroke, like breaks the knife or something.
I can see if it happens this way. Tam taking the blade, wounding Fane not being, you know, completely dead, maybe still even going after Rand, but Rand, because he had that thing that no one else knew about. By the way, I am loving those little memories of that we are getting in lead up to the release of the final book, and that I'm actually not wondering if Rand doesn't just for a split second just flip out and just unload whatever it is, like the awesome power of the light, and just obliterate Fane in that moment of just the reaction.
See, if that happens, though, and Rand is close enough to retaliate, he would just Balefire Fane out of existence. He would be gone.
Yeah,
which means
that is possible.
Tam would never have been.
Hmm.
I don't know. So, Balefire can't be the answer to everything, unfortunately. And I think at the last battle, he's going to have to be very judicious as to how he uses Balefire.
True.
Yeah, because it was just that simple. You could Balefire the Dark One and be done with.
I think we'll find that there's something. Conditions prevailing at Shai'al Ghul or at the last battle that will prevent him from using Balefire altogether.
Well, what Balefire does is burns the thread out of the pattern. The Dark One is outside the pattern, so Balefire would be ineffective against him.
I think I have to disagree with that, because doesn't he say to Demandred, even I cannot step outside of time or the pattern to bring back someone who's been bail-fired? I don't think he's outside the pattern.
Yeah, he does say something to the effect that not even he can step outside.
Anyone who suffered the bail-fire, even I cannot step outside of, I think he says time, but it might be the pattern. I don't remember.
He does say time.
Yeah, I think it's time. But that's basically the same thing. I mean, obviously, time is an integral point of part of the pattern as far as our reality goes. So I think he is part of our pattern. Oh, the only difference is that apparently there is some crossover to where there is basically one dark one in all the many worlds of the portal stones and the many layers of Teleronriad and everything else, at least according to Varin. Not that she necessarily would absolutely know that, but she was a pretty good scholar, so she might have.
Yes, but Tam going out in a blaze of glory, protecting Rand from Haddon Fain. Very interesting to visualize.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to come down firmly one way or another on Tam's ultimate fate, because I still can't quite make up my mind. I like this theory as a, if he's got to die, then this would be really cool. But I'm going to reserve judgment on Tam, I think.
Well, and again, Tam kind of fits in the category of he may be now a protected species because he's had some major revelation, and now he and Rand have reconciled and everything is cool between them. Either that makes him more likely to get killed, mm-hmm. which I think could be enough to set Zenrand right off the rails and back into Dark Rand, which would be a bad thing. Or he's protected from that because he's already had enough trauma and trial, so he's okay now.
There was one of those memories that really stuck with me, because it wasn't even a full sentence, and just it's because it's Tam. It says, as Tam attacked again, Rand lifted his sword and dash. The sentence doesn't finish. And I'm in my logical brain, I know that probably what's going on here is that Tam and Rand are training. Rand's trying to relearn the sword for using it with just one hand, and Tam is acting as kind of the instructor father, giving him that sword instruction he never gave him as a child, you know, and that's just, this is meant to think that something's gone wonky with one or the other. But the thing is, if I look at it in the darker perspective, there's that secondary possibility that somehow someone puts the whammy on Tam.
Oh,
and,
don't even.
Like,
don't
mind woogities him into being, like, evil at the last minute.
Mind woogities.
Mind woogity, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I don't really buy into that, because, like I said, I have too much faith that what it is what I just said with the training session, you know, heroic, epic father and son training montage. But there was just that something in my brain where I was like, oh, don't tell me that's what that means, because that would be so heart-wrenching to see such a solid, good, honest character get twisted and used to attack his own son, who would then be forced to kill him.
Okay, so Tam bites the dust, blaze of glory. Yeah, even if we hear about it after the fact, it has to be. Yeah, not, and that's the other thing, is not all of these death scenes can probably take place on camera, you know.
No.
We'll definitely hear about
Tam almost has to be, though.
I definitely don't want to have a film at 11 thing about this, or worse yet, as Robert Jordan apparently left in his notes, this question does not get resolved.
Oh, good heavens, please no.
I don't want to go there with that.
All right, I think we're back around to the top of the order.
All righty, well then, my next person that I want to talk about is Valen Luca, the owner-operator of his own traveling show. We don't exactly know where Valen Luca is at this point. He left Matt at Madrid, or Matarin, excuse me. Madrid is something else entirely.
He left Matt
back in
Spain.
Matadrine. So we don't know exactly where the circus is. Spoilers from A Memory of Light, we see one of the strongmen from the circus is actually now in Ibudar as a city guard. But here's what I think is going to happen with Valen Luca. Obviously, he came back to Ibudar at some point, close enough that one of the strong men left, and maybe even others. But he's currently working his way northward again, And he's going to show up at the last battle just in time to save Matt from some stupid something. an attack from the rear, something that Matt isn't expecting. Val and Luca will show up and be like, yeah, we just saw this army of guys behind us, entertain them for a couple days. It was great. And Matt's like, rap.
All I think is going to happen is that Lon is going to get killed. And that's not my one of my characters. Lon's going to get killed, and Val and Luca will show up and make another play for Nynaeve. Yeah, no, he promised to search the world over for Nynaeve, you know? And then he got married. That's a guy for you, huh?
My thought on Val and Luca, and I'm going to go counter to this, I'm going to say he somehow falls in with the Tinkers. And we see him in the epilogue as just kind of one of those, oh, hey, fancy meeting you guys here kind of things. Where, like, you even see the circus in the background. And maybe, you know, you see him, like, doing his little spiel at the front gate or something. But you never actually go up and be like, ah, and he survived, and he is a very rich man, and, you know, he has 6 grandkids. And you know, I honestly think he's going to be in the epilogue, but it's not going to be anything big or flashy. I do think he survives, and I think he just continues putting on the greatest show in Randland.
So he's going to walk up to the Tinker camp and go, hey, anybody here know how to walk a high wire?
I know exactly what it is. I know what it is now that Val and Luca will do. Val and Luca will be the ones who lead the forces of Shara to Randland.
Really? I thought he was going to find the song and give it to the Tinkers and make it part
of
the show.
No, we already know that Rand will just bring back the song. He has memories of it.
I think Val and Luca will get taken up by Tuon and transported to Shandar to entertain her while she's rebuilding the capital. Oh, excuse me, Fortuana, may she live forever.
No, that name doesn't exist. I'm going to be like Matt. No, that name doesn't exist.
Yeah, pretty much.
Would you like me to make up a backstory for your act?
So that's our thoughts on Val and Luca. Andrew?
My number 2 is Rark. Haven't heard much from him lately. Pretty sure he's still alive. Probably not going to survive the last battle. Again, I think the Aiel are going to need new... Ooh, wait, but do we know that? I may have just walked myself into a verbal trap. I'm trying to remember now, and if in Avienda's future flashback, that or if they mention whether he survived or not. Because I know Rark, I think, was mentioned.
He has
but
a
I don't
song.
Remember if it was just his... We did.
I think they talked about him dying old.
Yeah, something like that.
Never mind then. I think he survives then. I think he does something amazingly awesome during the last battle. I don't think it gets screen time. Maybe you just see him fighting with Gaul and Loyal for just the sake of having Aiel fighting with Ogier. And, yeah.
Shantan
Ogier? Ooh, some Death Watch Guard and some Aiel back to back fighting off like
awesome.
Trollocs and Murdrel. Awesome. There we go. Legend, wait for it, Dairy.
Yeah, epic battle.
Okay.
Well, I think probably Rark does survive. I think he has kids. And I think there was something where one of Avienda's descendants talks to his son about his memories of Rark, and she doesn't remember him that well, and they were both kids, but, you know.
No, so, she's talking to Rurark's son about his memories of Rand. Because apparently never met him.
Yeah, and he was talking about the character and how he didn't really know what to do with the IEO and stuff like that. But then we don't know if any of that vision is actually going to come true either, so that's problematic. But I could see Rark playing a significant part in the last battle. Like you say, he may not get a lot of screen time. It may be just a brief thing. Or to be comical, Rark could show up as Rand is bleeding out his last on the rocks of Shia Gul and say, well, you have met your toe, Randolph Orr.
Wow.
That's when Rand goes, F you. The first F-bomb of the Wheel of Time.
You're welcome.
That would be bad. No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he'll just do something really cool. He'll probably, like you say, hear about it off screen. And then he'll live happily ever after with a niece, presumably. And
Bear?
Durinda.
No, Durinda, yeah. Wait.
Yeah, the roof mistress.
oddly enough, since you mentioned that, my next one actually was a Mies.
Oh.
Because I kind of get the impression she's not going to survive through it, because she's going to be in the middle of it. She doesn't seem the type to take a more reserved role, because she's still trying to preserve a remnant of the Aiel.
Well, we presume he is. The Wise Ones had that goal. I don't know if the clan chiefs really embraced that.
Oh, I think the Mies would. I mean...
No, but he doesn't always do what she says either.
Well, no, I think she's going to die.
Oh, okay.
She is definitely one of the more influential of the Wise Ones. Especially, we have, again, going back to the Memories of Light, we have one that specifically is a Mies saying, "We must spread the word to all of our allies," Amis says. "We must not use this weave." So apparently they discover something that she says no one can use this.
Is it Balefire?
It might be. The question I really wonder about is Blaze of Glory or just kind of a simper?
I see her dying by the hands of one of the Forsaken. Don't know which one, but she would seem to probably be one of the more high-priority targets. Seeing how she is one of the leaders of the Wise Ones and she is one of the Wise One channelers.
Yeah, I'm sure all the channelers are going to be targeted in one way or another. That's just the way the Shadow rolls, pretty much.
Well, and it's not just the Shadow either. It's also the Shanshan.
That too.
Yeah, with friends like them, who needs the Shadow?
Yeah, really.
My thought is, if we are right about the Horn of Valyr and what it does, I'm guessing Amis is going to be on the Dreamwalker side of the last battle, where she's actually doing stuff in the world of dreams portion of the cosmic multi-dimensional combat.
Well, you know, that was one of my crazy theories, that the largest part of the last battle is going to take place in Teleradrion.
In which case, and if that does happen and she dies, that means she's probably going to die in the dream, and therefore
which means
like,
it'll be the final death.
Wake up
for wolves.
Yeah,
this
that's
weaving,
right.
Yeah.
Don't the heroes, if they die in Teleradrion, they die too, the final death. Because what's her name was talking about killing Brigitte and said, "No, I'll do something worse because if I kill you, you'll just die the final death in here."
Oh, I don't remember her saying that. I actually was going to raise the point. I don't know if it's other than the wolves. Wolves and animals die the final death. I don't know if that applies to humans. I really don't.
Well, I know Hopper was applying to Perrin.
We don't know that. Where does it say that?
Well, I remember several times Hopper telling Perrin if he died here, he would die, that it was too dangerous
Hopper
for him.
Hopper thinks that because Hopper's a wolf and that's what happens to wolves. But Hopper really know.
Well, they have the memories of all other wolves.
They
their
have a shadow of a shadow
more reliable
memory.
Than anyone else's memories.
I suppose.
They don't have reliable memories about men and wolf
humans.
Brothers. I mean, it's been so many.
It's a dream of a dream.
Pre-Age of Legends.
Yeah.
I think pre-Age of Legends was the last time there were wolf brothers before Elias.
I would venture to say that in all of history, in all of the ages, there have been so few wolf brothers that they may actually not really know. I mean, do we even know that any wolf brothers have actually died in the wolf dream? I mean, if there's only been a relative handful, dozens maybe none of them did die during the wolf dream. And again, just because the wolves believe something doesn't necessarily mean it's true. The wolves believe a lot of things that really aren't actually very accurate. They don't know a lot about human things.
According to one of the Wheel of Time wikis, which of course is not flawless, but it is apparently possible to rip a hero from the Wheel of Time using the One Power. This act, without aid, would result in the permanent death of the hero. The death of the hero can be prevented through unique properties of the ward or bond. So, I mean, essentially, if yanking them out of the dreaming could permanently kill them.
Yeah, it could. I mean, Brigitte would have died if she hadn't been bonded.
Very interesting to contemplate. There's so much still about this world we just can't understand. And
yeah,
I don't think we ever will until we get the encyclopedia.
Yes.
Yeah. I just thought about it. It. Of course, as we know from the Tower Bell, that people, when they die in Teleradrion, die in the waking world. But we really don't know with any of those humans if it's the final death or if they can have a rebirth or if their soul moves on to yet another dimension unknown to the wolves or anybody else.
Well, and here's the thought. Considering we started this with Amis and the quote I read, "We cannot use this weave." Obviously, Balefire's been around for a while, and Amis might not know about it yet and might freak out a little bit. But Might it instead be, because we've only seen it used once, we haven't seen this weave except for the one time when Mokiden used it. So might it be the weave that pulls someone and actually rips them out of the dream and into the real world?
Oh.
It could be, but the wise ones know about the one where they can take somebody out of the real world and pull them into Teleron.
They can pull them out of their dream and pull them into Teleron
Riad. We know that that's forbidden because that's what the Forsaken did, and it was evil and it was used for. That means you shouldn't do it.
But yeah, but
they
that's
also
out of their dreams,
her,
not yeah, straight it's from the waking world.
But well, then you also got to consider if the horn is used, the heroes can't be killed. So whatever the horn is doing...
Do we know that for sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure in the discussion they were talking about how they couldn't be harmed.
Okay. I must have missed that. I thought if they were killed while they were actually in this world, they would just go back to...
Because they were taking arrows and stuff from the Chan-Chan and nothing was happening and blasts of the one power. And in return, we're using magic arrows.
Yeah, I like Brigitte living her little thing. My bow is the ordinary sort today. So she didn't have a magic bow. Well, it was silver. It had to be magic. How many people have an actual silver bow? How impractical. You know how impossible it would be to draw a bow actually made of silver?
I'm not sure you could with that breakthrough bow.
Yeah, even if you had the strength, I don't think you could do it. It's not particularly pliable. Whatever. It's a figure of speech, I suppose.
All right, well, this is a bit far-filled from Amice, but it's where the conversation led us. Virginia, I don't think you've given us your second person yet.
I haven't. I'm going to actually pick... I was really just going to pick Bale Doman, but since he's inseparably linked next to Lao and Shipless, I think I'm just going to pick them as a team. They've now made the decision to go herring off to Tar Valon, and they've already encountered Nynaeve, we know.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen with them? I think they're both going to live, and I am going to go back to one of my original crazy theories, which is that Lawen will... I actually thought originally that this would be Satala Nan, which it still could be, but I think that she could possibly turn out to be a major liaison between the Chan-Chan and Egwene and perhaps avert some of the heinous, horrible feature that Avienda saw in the Glass Pillars. But that
possibly
doesn't say anything about Doman. I think Bale Doman would probably just, you know, live and be along for the ride. It just seems to be really good at lately.
And now delving again into the memories of light, here we have one that may apply to Lyowin Shipless or Satalanon or someone else we don't know. And this is Fortuana ignored her standing. This woman is my new Sophia, holy woman, she who may not be touched. We have been blessed. Let it be known.
Yeah, I wondered about that. It could easily be.
And
although it was kind of a retracing of steps for her if it was Lyowin, because, you know, she basically took her name away and banished her in disgrace. So perhaps it could be Satala. Now I've kind of got three for one here. Sorry.
It might be. Of course, in addition to this, if that has anything to do with Satala or Lyowin Shipless, we don't know. We do also have this interesting thing where we have Matt talking with somebody. One more thing, the Merith Damane. I'll deal with those channelers personally, Matt said. She gawked at him as if he were insane, which he might be.
It's going to be one of the only ways that they're going to get out of some parts of Avienda's vision.
Yeah.
Is to have somebody doing some serious interface. And I still think it could be Satal, because she did have a rapport with Tuan, and they had many long conversations and disagreed about many things and agreed about many things. And Satala was not afraid to stand up to her, which bodes well for her being the truth speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. If she's not Chan-Chan.
Well, for Tuana's the Empress, she can do whatever she pleases.
Sure, you can raise anybody to high blood, I guess.
You know who would be funny if it was? I mean, it's no possible way in the universe it could happen, but it would be really funny. Oh, and I lost her name. It was just there. The Post Swan. Why can't I remember her name? Because I hate her so much.
Elida.
Elida, yeah.
That crossed my mind too, but that seems so much in the nature of comic relief that I thought that couldn't possibly be the case. If Elida comes back and has an honored future after all this, I am going to reach through the grave and slap Robert Jordan, or at least Brandon. I can get a hold of Brandon.
Back on Aeon, though, we do also have this interesting dream that Egwene had long, long time ago about a Chan-Chan woman who said
Chan-Chan woman. Yep.
They were climbing Dragon Mountain, reached out her hand and said, we can get there if we both work together.
Yeah, I'm sure that's Lyowin. I don't know who else it could be.
especially now that she is there in the Aes Sedai camp.
The thing with them is that my favorite thing that could happen to them won't happen because Leolwyn won't go anywhere near boats because she was given the name Shipless, therefore she associated with ships because she's crazy and shonchen.
Unless her banishment is rescinded.
If her banishment happens to be rescinded, I think Bale loses a leg and gets a peg in its place.
A peg leg pirate.
And then she gets a parrot for her shoulder, and they live out their days plundering the coast.
You are so bad. Lyle would never go along.
No,
with
I like them. I don't think they're going to die. I think they come through, and I do. I see them as being kind of the public relations between the Empire of Shanshan and the Empire of the Dragon.
So it would be even funnier is if we discover that after all this that Bale Doman can channel and Fortuana slaps one of the domination bands on him. I don't think that's not even a crazy theory. That's just being silly.
And a peg leg and a parrot wasn't.
I know. Really? Really?
Well, we've seen people lose their eyes. We've seen people lose their hands. We haven't seen anybody really lose their leg yet.
Yes. Deep, the Asherman, lost his leg on the walls of Meridon.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. And got a peg leg, got a wooden leg. Yeah. Nothing. Oh, but Bale Doman getting a peg leg. Nothing cliche about that. But he needs an eye patch to go along with it.
He could borrow one from Matt.
No.
Yeah,
he does not need an eye
patch. Matt does not get an eye patch. He gets a sash because sashes are cool.
Sashes are much cooler than eye patches.
But there are no sashes like that in the Wheel of Time, where we've seen a number of eye patches, including Udo's.
No, we see Matt wearing a sash over his eye.
Well, that's only because he had no choice. It was all he had with him.
I'm sorry, but the sash is still cool. He is making it a thing.
No, it's too much. As a fashion statement, it's too much. He's already got the scarf around his neck, the sash around his eye would be just too
I think
much.
He would be epically cool with
the
sash around the neck and the kerchief around
just,
the neck.
Yeah, it's an empty socket.
We're into Dork City. You can't have two similar fashion items going on like that at the same time. It's just too much. With the hat,
when I get my long green mat coat, I will put on both a sash over my eye and a kerchief around my neck, and I will prove to you that it can be done and it will look good.
No, and your passport will then be stamped visited Dorkland. And with your date and everything. No, I'm going to be adamant about this.
No,
the scarf is cool. The sash is
like
cool.
Like bow ties.
Uncool. Okay, next.
All right, moving on then, I guess. And the last person I want to talk about is Pavara. Yes, that Pavara who is currently at the Black Tower. That same Pavara who we find out in the first chapter, or I guess it's the second chapter of the book, decides, hey, you know what I should do? I should just force this guy into a bond. And then he turns right around and says, no, you don't, and bonds her. It's hilarious. And then they have some form of telepathic link. Here's what I think is going to happen. Obviously, Anderal is the leading force of the good guys in the Black Tower, even though he has absolutely no ability with the One Power, especially with gateways aren't working. He has no ability with the One Power at all. The last thing we see with the promotional stuff is they're going to attack the Mahil's palace and get Loghain out. They assume that Loghain has been captured.
New thing that was just released yesterday. Or at least I got an email about yesterday from Tor. NPR had a...
Yeah, that's Chapter 3. And we have that's what I'm talking about. I haven't even read that yet. You need to read that.
I thought it said that Loghain and Time were all buddy-buddy now.
Taim's cronies and those who have obviously been turned are spouting.
Right.
At the end of the section, Anderal says, obviously they have Loghain, otherwise they wouldn't be able to make these claims. And so we are going to go free him now.
Oh, I missed that part. I was having trouble reading parts of it because the way it was formatted
going
on
up
my
for
iPod.
You. That's how that section ends. And so, obviously, they're mounting a full-blown assault on a freaking Forsaken in his palace, surrounded by all sorts of turned channelers.
This will not end well.
Either. I really hope this doesn't happen, because Andral has become my second favorite character next to Gawain. Another one I would love to be able to play at some point. Either they are going to find themselves on a turning table, as in a black table strapped down, surrounded by 13 Mydral and 13 Channelers, or they are just going to be straight up executed. Because there ain't no way that they are going to be able to pull this crap off. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Seems improbable.
Unless Andoral discovers the key to this drain spike and can channel gateways anyway, because he's that freaking awesome.
Uh-huh.
Either way,
mine
is a double feature too, and I apologize for this. It's both Pavara and Andoral, but they're inseparably linked in a really weird way. So either they're going to be captured and turned. Pavara would be turned. Andoral is probably going to be killed if they get captured. It's just, they aren't even going to mess with it. Or he'll almost get killed and then figure out how to channel the gateways anyway and just start cutting bodies up.
Actually, I'm going to say this again, I really can't comment too much because I think your person kind of links with my person.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just going to say that I think what will happen is a timely intervention of Perrin, who when we last saw him was next going to investigate the fact that Grady couldn't get to the Black Tower to visit his son because gateways weren't working.
Ooh.
He got that on his to-do list. So timely intervention is what I'm going to go with.
Yes, the parent's done this already. Would it make sense for him to be the one to do it again? Well, yes, it would.
Well,
he
said he was going to do it. He's the one who can go in the wolf dream. He's the one who can go and destroy the dream spike. He thinks there's another one that's preventing gateways from happening to the Black Tower. He already told
Grady
he was going to deal with it.
He does have a hammer of awesomeness. He suddenly gets rid of that, wakes up, says, Grady, we're going, and then they go and destroy and wreck house. That would be awesome. That would be absolutely awesome. Because to this point, the only people who have killed Forsaken are Rand and Moraine.
Pretty much, yeah. So Perrin will just show up at the last battle, and Rand will say, "Now I've got to go deal with those Ashaman in the Black Tower." Oh, Rand, I dealt with that for you. They're all cool now.
Yeah, I killed him. They were calling him one of the Chosen. I don't know. His head is now a smear on a wall in his palace.
Yeah.
Something about a Mahale, or I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I just braved that guy for you. Oh, thanks,
he's dead now. You're good.
You're good to go. And all the other guys joined Perrin's army because he's Taveren, and everybody joins his army at some point.
No kidding.
I even expect that random nebulous force of Shaido that we're supposed to be tracking them down are probably going to end up joining his army.
All right, well, that's my last two, I guess. Sorry. Andrew?
I'm going to go with Demandred.
Ooh.
Because we've had kind of this good guy thing with the exception of Fane. And Demandred we've seen probably the least of that we know of out of the Forsaken recently. We don't really know where he is. We know he's going to play a pivotal little role somewhere, but we're not sure what.
Yeah, we know nothing about his current plans because they have specifically worked very hard to make sure we know nothing about his current plans.
What I'm guessing, and this might be out there, there's going to be some fighting. Demandred's going to be revealed as someone nobody expected, because that's just the way it's going to be. He's going to be in like some sword fight with Rand or Matt or Perrin or something. I'm going to say he gets taken captive.
Woo!
Ooh.
And then when the Dark One is destroyed, he's going to automatically age to the age he should have been.
Oh, no! No, please, I don't want to see that.
And he'll look like Balthamel or whatever with this.
I'm talking like mummified corpse instantly.
he's talking Last Crusade type. Well, here's the thing, though, is he wasn't being preserved by the Dark One. He was being preserved by the seals. And so he was in a state of stasis for 3,000 years.
Okay, never mind. I do like him being captured, though.
Well, you know what he means better than being captured? Him being forced to surrender. Sword fight and beaten and, you know, healed.
Tavara bonds him. You know, the Reds can take as many as they want. They can have as many Ashaman as they want. Andrew's going to gateway into there, and Favara's going to slap that weave right on him. I like it.
Well, she's already proven she has no qualms about forcing men to be her bonds. So
you betcha.
More power to her.
She's just the girl to do it, too.
Oh, gosh.
From Black Aja Hunter to Ajaman Bonder.
You are mine now.
She'll have a whole little herd of them. It did say that the reds have no limits, as long as they could, were men who could channel. So she can have as many as she wants. She's not even limited like the Greens.
The Greens aren't limited? What are you talking about?
Well, they're limited to 4, theoretically.
No.
I mean, obviously, some people have circumvented that, but they had to keep it on the QT because it was
I only
bad.
Have 9. Anyway, Demandred,
bonded.
beyond what we think his final turnout will be, what role do we think he's going to be playing in the last battle? Do we think, and I may have to look up quotes, because I seem to recall that at some point in time, there was a quote that said that Shara is not going to play a part in this.
Yeah, I think I saw that in an interview. Nor will the Isle of Mad Men.
This seems really, really, really silly to do. But do we think that Demandred has set up in one of these places that we've never visited? Or do we think that he has some actual covert army in some nation that we just don't really know about? Oh my gosh! Does he have control of Gildan? You know, that place where the Band of the Red Hand helped the leader gain control? Could he be that guy that they helped
there? No, that was Mirindi.
Was that Mirindi?
Yeah, that was King Wodrum of Mirindi. Gildan is where Alejandra's from.
I do apologize. So Mirindi, could he be that guy, maybe? Just maybe? Because we haven't ever actually seen him on screen.
Wasn't the king one of those people who everybody assumed that either Grandal or Mithana was messing like with fake letters
Al-Salam of Eridanon.
Oh, you're right.
And we found him. Caroline Glass, where the Aes Sedai were apparently wandering around lost in the snow.
Was he a guest of the White Tower? Because I know there were several people, but I can't remember who the other ones were.
We have, I'm looking at the information on Encyclopedia Watt. We have never actually seen this guy, but we know that he has a huge army in Lugard, which is his capital. Additionally, Egwene sent the message that she sent to everybody and their dog, saying, hey, you should come to the Field of Maralora and see if we can't, you know, convince the Dragon Reborn not to destroy the world. But he hasn't responded.
I'd like to see that conversation. Good going, Egwene. You invited Demandred to the meeting on how to win.
God, can you imagine how awful that'd be? I have to imagine that Zen Rand would have some way of detecting one of the Forsaken if he can detect dark friends.
Yeah.
Good going, Egwene. Yeah, that's real good going there.
Like, seriously, Egwene, you invited one of the Forsaken?
Why didn't you invite the Dark One?
Oh, no, I was going to say, it's somebody we haven't met yet, but that only counts as to when he said that, right? We hadn't met him at the Neck of Dreams. What if he's like, you know, Egwene's kind of notorious for picking the bad keepers. What if it's, what's her name, Sylviana? What if he's hiding?
Yes, Demandred is Sylviana.
Masquerading is Sylviana.
This makes a whole lot of sense because he can totally channel Sidar.
Well, who knows what he can do? He's one of the Forsaken. No, probably not. All right, I don't know.
It is interesting, though, because a lot of crap has been happening in Mirindi throughout the entire course of the books, but we haven't ever really spent any time paying any attention to it. We spend a lot of time in Andor. We spend a fair chunk of time in Carrion, spend a whole lot of time in Tyr, and a good chunk of our attention in Ilion. Maenae has also been important. The Borderlands, always important, kind of always there. Mirindi? We even spent time with the White Cloaks in Altara and Almadesia. We spent time in Ibudar. We spent time in Eridomon. We spent time everywhere except Mirindi.
What about all those lords that came to the meeting with Egwene, with the Andorans? There was like one Mirandian for every Andoran. Oh, Red Rodin wasn't one of them, as far as we know. Maybe he was doing like the king. Was it in, where was that? In Terrabon? He shows up at the dinner masked with a bunch of his cronies. They had been in Ebudar, Garden of Silver Breezes. And the man wearing the lion mask was the king. Oh, you're not supposed to know that. Oh, no, that was Jacob Carradine. Or maybe he was doing something like that.
Possibly. I don't know. Just suspicious. It may have something to do with the Mount Dread. We don't know yet.
But we'll find out today.
I like the Pavara theory. I really like the Pavara theory.
All right, Virginia, who's your last one?
Good question. All right. The obvious choice. Like, what about Bob? What about Elida?
She will remain a Damane. She will stay a Damane for the rest of her life, and she will never stop being a Damane.
Okay, works for me.
A low-level Damane. The Damane's Damane.
Yeah, she will be the lowest possible scum of the earth for the rest of her life. Pretty please and thank you.
But wouldn't it be a cool scene if Egwene somehow goes and negotiates with Fortuna and her advisors on how to resolve the problem, and Elida is one of the Damane in waiting?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be a cool meeting?
And you know that whatever meeting Egwene would be holding, that Fortuna, no matter what she said, that no matter what promises that she make, that she wouldn't break, that she wouldn't just collar all of these Merith Damane there, that she would have all of the Damane would be
all
sisters that she captured.
Yeah.
She would specifically choose ones that were taken straight out of the tower. Just to say, nana, nana, nana.
Yep. Well, they already did that. You know, they did that for the wise ones. They showed off the captured wise ones as if to taunt them. You shunted, aren't you smart?
My thought with Elida is that she'll get a little too mouthy and they'll end up killing her.
Mm. Oh, please. Pretty please.
Please, Lord. Yeah.
Slowly.
I don't know. Here's my fear about Elida is that she gained a whole lot of favor by giving them the channeling weave. The channeling weave? Yes, they had to learn how to channel. By giving them gateways and traveling.
Yeah.
And so I'm afraid that she will become an upper-level Damane rather than being treated as the dog that she is.
My fleeting thought just now that she would be given to Egwene as a gift, and Egwene would leave her collared and put into that same little tiny cramped cell with her leash hung on a peg on the wall. And change the straw one week.
That's what I was thinking.
Well, Egwene wouldn't be able to do that. Egwene would not be able to keep anyone in a collar. She just mentally and emotionally, she wouldn't be able to handle that. Unfortunately.
Well, she told Sylviana they were going to brick up all the. Oh no, she told Swan they were going to brick up all those cells. So Elida somehow gets given, still collared, to the Aes Sedai, and she ends up with Pavara. So Pavara can have. So far, I can have Elida and Demandress to be her tame little, the confession serve and channel for Andral.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Richard, who we got?
My last one touches on the one you picked, and that's Grady, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think he's going to have a lot to do with what finally happens in the Black Tower.
Yeah, Pavar's going to bond him, too.
No, I think this will finally earn him his second pin.
He should have earned that
one
a long
think, yeah.
time ago.
He really should have the second pin.
I think Perrin's going to take care of the Dream Spike, and he's going to lead some of the Ashaman that's been outside the tower back in to help clean up. Maybe even bring Ran along for the ride.
Grady's going to go back, clean house, and then bond his wife and live a happy, normal life.
With Gadrin, his ugly as a stump kid. It was supposed to be really good.
You know, I actually counted. There's at least six people, and some of them young, that are basically ugly as stumps in the Wheel of Time series. That's not too uncommon of a description, you know, how ugly some, especially boys, how ugly they are. But I just finished my, you know, read-through for the coming-up book, and I actually started noticing, counting, there's at least six.
All of which could be indicative of something.
Here's a thought. Grady is essentially, am I remembering this properly, the Nynaeve of Ashaman.
No, I think that was
no.
Backwards.
Flynn.
It's Flynn, you're right. Dahmer
bonded,
Flynn is the...
Bonded by Corell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That shoots that.
Shot that down, yeah. Sorry.
Well, no. I was
experience.
Just thinking, what would happen if Loghain actually were 1313 turned? Flynn or somebody like him, like Grady, figured out how you reversed it.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And
that'd
then
really cool.
Loghain could come back and do his, I'm a total BA, I'm gonna smush Taim and take over the Black Tower as the new Mahail. Hey, glory for me. What?
Well, here's the thing. We still have a viewing that we don't know what to do with. That Cad Swain is going to teach both Rand and the Ashaman something that they will not like to learn. They would be elated at this point if they could learn some way to reverse the 1313 rule or turnings.
Oh, that's true for the Ashaman.
Yeah.
So it might be that Cadswain has to teach them. There's nothing we can do at this point. We just have to kill them.
I think.
Yeah, but don't they already assume that?
I don't know.
I think that Andral bonded with Pravara will come up with a way to undo that, and also how to not only destroy the dream spike, but how to make new ones. I think Andral is going to end up being the Ashaman who can, like Elaine, can create Tarangreal.
So do we have any final thoughts on our miscellany and final predictions about the non-essentials prior to Tarmon Gaiden?
The great lord shall rule, and all hail our new lord and master, the Dark Lord.
Yeah. You know, all I can say about that is that these Dark Friends are total idiots. Think about it. It's like, you know, those Black Aja were saying the great lord will rule in blood and ash and everything. Like, that doesn't sound like any kind of fun to me whatsoever. And then that whole dark prophecy business at the end, like, really? Why would anybody sign up for that?
They were told there would be free pie.
Yeah, free cake. And Ishamael is absolutely freaking crazy. So there's that.
Yeah, but
I can understand. He's crazy.
Yeah, but how do you get all these other people to sign up for this nonsense?
Okay, I got a great idea. We're gonna free the great lord, and he's gonna destroy the world, kill everyone, and we'll live in pain and suffering for the rest of eternity. Who wants to join?
Yeah.
I want to go back to light, please.
Well, you know what happened, you know, with Baron's Warder. There aren't any ways out once you're in.
I mean, even look at Antar. He was hoping to get out of it was to be the last to be killed.
Pretty much. Anyway, but on that cheery note,
it looks like we'll be wrapping this up for now. We hope to be able to see a number of you and actually hear from a number of you online, live from our broadcast for the midnight release of A Memory of Light.
Yay! Finally! Yay!
If you have any questions, comments, thoughts on this episode, thoughts on the series as a whole, or exciting predictions for the final volume in the Wheel of Time, you can, of course, get a hold of us by sending us an email at podcast@dragonmount.com.
And we will be happy to answer. We will enjoy it.
Definitely. And to make sure that you are always up with the latest of what will be going on and happening, especially with the release coming happening here in just a few days, make sure that you are following us both on Facebook and Twitter, as we will try to post in both places, but especially Twitter. We'll make sure that that keeps getting updated because it's just easier to update from the phone. And both of those are, you can find us as Fourth Age. Just search for Fourth Age on either of those, and we should pop up because we're the only ones using that name.
We hope you enjoy the book. We're really looking forward to it. It's just a few days. So until that time, until we talk to you again, this is Virginia saying may the light illumine you until we meet again.
This is Richard. Enjoy the book and have a good read.
Yes, and until next time, may you find water and shade.
And for myself, Andrew Gallos, and everyone here at the Fourth Age, Soravyananto Manchima, Taishite.
I only have 9. And we all sleep together in a big bed, and it's beautiful. I love the
I want a copy of that little clip, please.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, guess who's editing this one?